WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Now that a long-standing cooperation between Harrisonburg Public Schools and Massanutten Technical Center is ending, City Schools sponsor a new program with Blue Ridge Community College. A lawyer for the Shenandoah County School Board, enmeshed in a lawsuit over Confederate school names, speaks out. And as the governor signs a flurry of bills, Jeff Shapiro reviews the week in Virginia politics. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, April 3rd. Poison control centers have been receiving a high volume of calls related to the drug Kava. UVA Health's Blue Ridge Poison Center says those calls rose by 383% in recent years. Men aged 20 and older accounted for most of the calls. Kava is a plant native to the Pacific Islands with an active ingredient called kavalactones, which acts as a sedative and can reduce anxiety. Calls involving the combined use of kava and kratom, which is often found in gas stations and vape shops, accounted for 30% of the kava-related calls. The percentage of exposures to kava that led to severe health symptoms such as adverse neurological and cardiovascular effects have also increased. The findings were published in the CDC's weekly bulletin, the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Harrisonburg City Public Schools is partnering with Blue Ridge Community College to launch a career and technical education program for high school students. WHSV reports that the partnership will bring high school students to the college campus for college courses starting next fall. The pilot program will offer six career paths: career exploration, healthcare, human services, intro to agriculture, early childhood education, and drone technology. Harrisonburg City Public Schools is preparing to split from the Massanutten Technical Center in summer 2027, ending longstanding agreement with Rockingham County Public Schools to share governance of MTC. HCPS will fund the new program, which is expected to start with 50 to 100 students with plans to grow and add more career paths in the coming years. A federal judge already decided the Shenandoah County School Board violated the First Amendment when they reinstated Confederate names on public schools. The court is still considering whether they broke other laws in the process. WMRA's Randy Behage spoke with the school board's lead attorney about the case and filed this report.
Oral arguments were held on Tuesday in the NAACP and students' lawsuit against the school board for reinstating the names Stonewall Jackson High School and Ashby Lee Elementary School in 2024, after they'd been removed in 2020. Now, U.S. District Judge Michael F. Urbanski is deciding whether the school board violated the 14th Amendment, Title VI of the Civil Rights Act, and the Equal Educational Opportunities Act. For the first time in the nearly 2 years my colleague Bridget Manley and I have been reporting on this court case, WMRA got to interview someone with the defense.
My understanding is that my client will take it as far as necessary, including seeking a writ at the U.S. Supreme Court.
Jim Gwynn is the managing partner and founder of the Gwynn Waddell Law Firm in Salem. In the small world of the Commonwealth, Gwynn studied history at Washington and Lee University just before Brigadier General Ty Sigley, who testified as an expert witness for the plaintiffs about the Civil War and Jim Crow era. Gwynn also attended UVA Law School alongside Judge Urbanski. Gwynn said regardless of how Urbanski rules on the claims that went to trial in December, this case is far from over.
Well, we're going to appeal either way because of his ruling on the First Amendment. Regardless of what he does with the issue that was argued yesterday, he has still basically ruled that the name of the school, Stonewall Jackson anyway, must be changed. It seems to me that it's rather ground-shaking because if he's correct, then every school in the United States that's named after a Confederate general or someone else who makes people feel uncomfortable, you know, could be subject to court order to change the name.
The Shenandoah County case is unique across the country because the school board removed and then reinstated Confederate names. But Gwynn believes this case could open the door for incoming students to challenge a school's longstanding name.
This sort of case arose up in Hanover County several years ago, and the court there ruled that statute of limitations precluded litigating the case. And so the plaintiffs brought this case because of the name change back, which happened within the 2-year statute of limitations that applies to cases alleging constitutional harm.
He said one of the reasons he took this case in the first place was because he was offended at the application of 21st century standards to 19th century figures.
You know, we now look at this stuff and we say, okay, because the Confederate generals were slaveholders, then nothing they did in life was worthwhile. I don't think history works that way. There are plenty of people in life who have absolutely no redeeming qualities. Hitler, Pol Pot. But you've got guys who were products of their time, and can we blame them for not having the overall moral view or whatever that they shouldn't own slaves? Now, does that make the fact of slaveholding less onerous? No. But could we just have a little bit of understanding of people in their own times?
He brought up the fact that James Madison University is named after an enslaver. This was also raised at trial because one of the former student plaintiffs is now in college there, but hadn't campaigned against this name as he had against Stonewall Jackson.
But they both were slave owners, and one of them fought to preserve that. Well, read enough history and you'll realize that Madison realized he had to compromise to get the Constitution done with regard to slaveholding. And all of this is very ugly from our perspective in the 21st century. And I think that what we're overlooking is that folks in the 19th and 18th centuries had a very different view.
I mean, some of them, to be fair, there were the people who were enslaved and there were abolitionists in certain parts of the country. It's not like there was one monolith of opinion in America at the time.
No, there wasn't. I agree with you. There were abolitionists in the North, but there weren't enough of them to say, no, sorry, we're not going to do it this way to have a constitution.
At the end of the day, Gwynn thanks the Shenandoah County residents who favored the Confederate names, who elected the 2024 school board members who campaigned on the issue, would have had the same attachment regardless of what the names had been.
And when they hear the name Stonewall Jackson, they think of their school. They think of the building. They think of their school uniforms. They think of when they were there and, you know, they scored a touchdown or they hit the winning free throw and they were the homecoming queen or they were the valedictorian. And that thought process doesn't include pondering these great questions. Changing the name of it deprives us because I have a diploma from Stonewall Jackson High School, which no longer exists. And I think that's important to it.
How the federal court for the Western District of Virginia views it, or for that matter, how the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals will, remains to be seen. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
Find a longer version of this interview with links to more information at WMRA.org and on our app. The latest batch of bills being signed by Governor Abigail Spanberger largely deals with education issues. Radio IQ's Brad Kuttner reports.
The governor signed 8 pieces of legislation Thursday. One aims to train teachers to identify students with mental health challenges. Another offers funds for support staff for at-risk students. And one from Roanoke area officials, Delegate Sam Rasool, a Democrat, and Senator David Suterline, a Republican, expands the Community Builders pilot program, which aims to keep kids out of trouble after school and over the summer. Here's Delegate Rasool.
What we find is when we invest in children early, building good habits, especially middle school, it actually helps them make better choices and lessens their propensity to be involved in gang and gun violence.
The program covers both Roanoke and Petersburg public school systems. Other efforts signed Thursday include new standardized safety rules for public pools. Another aims to assess school meal debt across the Commonwealth school divisions. All the bills Spanberger signed Thursday passed unanimously or with bipartisan support. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
A bill on Governor Spanberger's desk would create harsher punishments for notary publics who mislead non-English speakers about the scope of their work. Norfolk delegate Jackie Glass carried the bill after hearing of notaries that targeted Spanish-speaking customers by posting signs in Spanish advertising immigration and housing legal help. Patricia Bracknell, founder and CEO of Virginia's Chamber of Hispanic Progress, says vulnerable people can lose thousands of dollars to fake businesses.
They can do marketing campaigns for these type of services. Crooks come in all colors and flavors and sizes and cultures.
While the measure explicitly mentions Spanish language advertisements, it also says any non-English ad must be accurate. The governor also has signed legislation that aims to help those facing eviction. Radio IQ's Michael Pope reports.
In the last month, Virginia had more than 8,000 evictions, according to the Eviction Lab at Virginia Commonwealth University. And advocates worry about those 8,000 families that have now lost a sense of stability and are in danger of falling into poverty.
Evictions are not just the result of poverty. Evictions can also be the cause of poverty.
That's Christy Mara at the Virginia Poverty Law Center.
The only way to keep people from eventually getting evicted for not paying their rent is to help them pay their rent.
That's why she's celebrating a bill signed by Governor Abigail Spanberger this week establishing the Eviction Prevention Program that will identify factors contributing to evictions and provide interventions to prevent them. Taylor McCormick is CEO of the Hampton Roads nonprofit For Kids, which received money from a pilot version of the program that's existed since 2020.
It's super important when you're trying to deliver services to know if a funding stream is going to continue to be available. So once we establish that any kind of public policy is really working for the folks that would actually deliver that services, we need to be able to plan for it year to year.
Now that the governor has signed the bill establishing the program, it's expected to have a budget of $3.5 million each year from the general fund. I'm Michael Pope.
Virginians are being bombarded with conflicting information about the proposed redistricting amendment. Jad Khalil with partner station VPM News has more.
Virginians are voting on whether to counter a gerrymandering push from Republican President Trump with a Democratic-led one. As they're doing that, they're hearing different messages from ex-President Barack Obama. An ad released Thursday indicates he's against gerrymandering.
Our parties have moved further and further apart, and it's harder and harder to find common ground.
But that comment is from 2017. Today, Obama is supportive of the effort.
Help us chart a better path forward, Virginia. Vote yes by April 21st.
It's the latest in a series of contradictory messages being paid for with dark money. Marty Cohen is a professor at James Madison University. He says an April election without known candidates or parties listed on the ballot makes confusion a more impactful campaign tactic.
It's definitely seems to be more fertile ground for the effort to mislead.
Plenty of voters think they have enough information, though. Over 600,000 already cast early ballots. Voting ends April 21st.
Jad Khalil reporting. Well, finally today, as we're reporting, Abigail Spanberger has spent the week signing bills into law, the first ones of her governorship. Radio IQ politics analyst Jeff Shapiro joins Michael to discuss that and the latest in state politics and government.
All right, a lot of news to get to this week, starting with Governor Abigail Spanberger. Jeff Shapiro, she's putting her signature on the first bills in her time as governor.
1,200 bills sent to Governor Spanberger by the General Assembly in its winter session. Right now, she's signing the easy ones. That includes a requirement that those pharmacy benefit managers, the guys who broker drug costs, pass discounts on to their customers. School safety legislation, most of it was bipartisan. Wearable alarms for teachers, closer scrutiny by school officials of, you know, troubled kids, figuring out some way to, you know, ease debts for the kids who have to buy a school lunch. But we've got a lot of tough ones that she's got to consider. Firearms restrictions, collective bargaining expansion. And what about the framework for commercial weed? That market's supposed to kick in January. She going to be seeking changes on this stuff? And what will the liberal Democrats say about this, those who control the General Assembly, and maybe those noisy conservative Republicans as well?
So across Virginia, voters are going to the polls right now in the statewide referendum for a constitutional amendment to redraw Virginia's congressional districts. And former Governor George Allen wants to debate the current governor, Abigail Spanberger, who is in favor of this amendment. But Jeff Shapiro, a don't get the sense that she's up for defending her position.
Yeah, that ain't happening. This is an artful decline by the governor from the former governor's challenge. I think what's really interesting about this is that we're talking about two political figures of consequence whose careers were dramatically shaped by redistricting. George Allen lost and then won a House of Delegates seat largely because Virginia was forced in the early 80s to go to single-member House districts. He lost his congressional seat in the 90s, but then because the Democrats lumped him in with another Republican congressman, the upshot of that was it positioned George Allen for the governorship in 1993, which he won by a landslide. Someone like Abigail Spanberger, who was elected from a Richmond suburban anchored district that was in dispute and redrawn in the middle of her first campaign back in 2018, and then running for the last time in a redrawn district that was reoriented to the Northern Virginia suburbs, where she really wasn't known particularly well, but that big win up there positioned her for the gubernatorial nomination last year, which she won, the governorship, that is, by a landslide.
And then finally, we've seen a lot of turmoil in higher ed, and now we have a state agency that's putting some contours on that.
Yeah, a lot of this has to do with that Trump-induced turmoil in higher education. State Council of Higher Education is now estimating that $36 million hit to public colleges and universities from the Trump administration crackdown on the border and immigration. The problem here is there are fewer and fewer foreign students showing up at these very desirable public colleges and universities. That would include Virginia Tech. It would include the UVA, but the school that's taking the biggest hit, George Mason, Virginia's global campus, if you will. And P.S., Jim Ryan, who was targeted by Glenn Youngkin and Donald Trump, essentially for ouster as UVA's president, looks like he's going to get the last word up there. We're told that he is going to be speaking at some of the end of year ceremonies at Charlottesville.
All right. That's all the time that we've got for this week. My name is Michael Pope, and we have been joined by politics analyst and UVA scholar Jeff Shapiro. Talk to you next week.
Roger that.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy your Friday.